stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No! Stop talking to me in the braking zone.
And Mexico City E-Prix goes to Felix Rosenquist. Wait, nope. I meant Daniel Abt. Yes, I'm completely serious. Daniel Abt has won the Mexico City E-Prix.
Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
You are the world champion!
See that? We had an Oscars joke. We're relevant and topical on this show. Welcome back to Motorsport 101, episode 125. I'd like to call it now the afternoon after the night before. We're recording two shows in 2 days. Go us. But this is the show where we basically talk about the stuff that didn't get in with the IndyCar season preview. So, in this edition, we'll be talking about the Mexico City E-Prix as, well, turns out Daniel Abt gets to repeat the idea of being a first-time Formula E winner. Who do you? Pour one out for Felix, everybody. As well as talking about the Formula One first round of testing at Catalunya and the, well, not-so-fun story about F1 TV being a thing. Well, if you're British like me, anyway. Compared to the hostile American takeover of this podcast, it's probably been pretty good for other guys in this call. In the meantime, welcome back, Mr. Ryan King.
Yep, pulling out that year-old Oscar joke.
Shameless. You shameless man. But we're here for it. Representing Nashville, as always, Mr. RJ O'Connell.
Howdy. We have exactly one less Oscar than both Martin Scorsese and Kobe Bryant. Who knew?
Sigh. Need I say more? Sigh.
Yeah, if Lewis Hamilton doesn't win a Grammy when he retires, like, literally because of his retirement, I'm gonna be disappointed.
Yeah, like, he has set a bar that is now going to be impossible for the F1 world to follow.
the ultimate retirement speech. Win an Oscar for it.
Have you guys already, like, done a complaint about this supposed composing a new F1 team? Am I really behind?
No, we have not done that yet.
Nope. And that should probably be a fair time to introduce our fourth guest on the show this week. She's back! It's Hazel Southall, everybody! Hey!
Hola.
She's in Mexico, literally, as she's speaking. She's about to board a plane in about an hour's time. But she's still on the show! Like, we are in a highly productive bunch, and that's really awesome. Thanks for joining us, Hazel. It's like, how was the E-Prix from over there?
It's really great, because unlike most E-Prix, where like the media are in a kind of strange marquee, a bit like you're waiting for somebody to get married in a champagne-soaked press conference. But the food's weirder and like there's no free bar. Like we were using the F1 facilities, which meant there was natural light in the media center, and yet none of our skin like sizzled and burnt. So maybe we're still okay.
Sure.
But maybe the wholesome nature of Formula E has stopped us turning fully into ghouls. But yeah, no, it was good fun. It's been very hot. It's been weird on some levels. As always, Formula E is a good time.
More on that in a couple of minutes' time. We'll get the pleasantries out of the way. Places you can find us real quick: youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. You can follow us on Twitter at motorsport_101. And if you'd like to follow us on our personal handles, you can do so at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, at RJ O'Connell, and at HSouthwellFE. That's exactly how you think it is. And if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 early access a month gets you into both early versions of this show and to Bike Live, and which again returns later this week, our big 2018 MotoGP season preview. It's a very, very good week to be a Patreon backer, if I do say so myself. Right, without further ado, let's get into the meat and potatoes of the show and let's talk about the Mexico City E-Prix. Then, so Mexico City E3, we're back again, and King and Audi won the race, but it wasn't the one we were expecting, kinda, sorta, again.
Ooh, yeah, it wasn't the one that started all the way in last place.
Yeah, like more on Lucas Degrassi's ridiculously bad luck later. It's become a bit of a running gag this season, unfortunately. Still had a great performance, mind you, but. Yeah, and another grid drop for poor Lucas, and a double whammy of having to take a time penalty as well because he wasn't able to serve the full 10 places of his grid penalty. Sad face. But his teammate, Daniel Abt, stepped up to the plate and delivered his first win in Formula E. Again!
Oh, Daniel Abt, the only person who can have their first time twice.
Yes. Did so in dramatic fashion. I mean, it was pretty straightforward after he qualified in fifth. It wasn't the best qualifying in the world from Daniel, but had a great start, got up into third place, and well, the race was dominated in the end. I think he did, didn't he?
No, sorry. He ended up fifth because Sam was dropped out. He wasn't in super pole.
Yeah, like after the 15 reshuffles we had to the
crew. Alex. Yeah. So this was actually great. We spent ages in the media center working out how the fuck Alex Lynn was 10th. he should not have been. He should have been 13th. But because his penalty, so it was applied in grid order. So his penalty was applied before Sam and then Lucas's. So he was dropped upwards by both of them.
Well, welcome to the 2017 Formula One grid after another McLaren engine penalty infected weekend, basically, at this point, where basically it's basically like trying to crack the Da Vinci Code, working out who started where. Good times. But, App started fifth, but, I mean, Felix Rosenquist was looking comfortable up the front, and then next thing you know, his battery suffers issues, and he ended up parking it.
I don't know. So, So the kind of things you do get from the ground, but not on the broadcast. Mm. Everybody knew Mahindra was in trouble.
Really?
Yeah, they couldn't keep the battery temperatures on. Battery. Temperature mode management is a really big part of Formula E. Obviously, there's a huge amount of electronic control that goes on between things, most of which is still managed by the drivers. It's not quite the kind of like 6,000 people in an office in Brackley situation.
Right.
But for whatever reason, Mahindra could not get a stable situation with their batteries, and for both of the cars that shut down, it was the battery over.
Ah, so that's what did it then. So yeah, we didn't get a lot of that hyped up on the broadcast, certainly in the UK anyway. There was, like, I didn't realise there was, like, a sense of presence in the media that this was going to be a big hurdle for Mahindra to get over this weekend, but we certainly saw it on TV when it happened.
It was just because I was like, what the fuck's wrong with these cars, and they were like, it's the batteries, but...
Straight to the point, Hazel, as always.
you can say that kind of thing.
Of course you can. Off the record, of course. But we all saw it for us. That was about just before the first round of stops. And poor Felix, down and out of there, starting from pole position. Another cracking super pole lap from him. And by almost 4 tenths in the end as well. Only man under 1 minute and 2 seconds during that super pole. But a big DNF from the lead, which opened the door for Oliver Turvey until the pit stops came around. And that's pretty much what won up the race, really. He was, I think, one of the fastest pit stops ever.
Yes, one of the most efficient. We should talk about pit stops. Racing pit stops are a new feature of Formula E. This is the second race we've had them, as in pit stops where the pit stop itself is part of the racing, where you're doing it at pace.
Mm-hmm.
And this is now the second injury during a pit stop this year. Andre Lotterer ran into his engineer, or sorry, his mechanic. This time, obviously in Hong Kong, Sam Bird hit a mechanic trying to drive too fast into the garage on dirty concrete. Again, here, the track was very dirty, the pit lane was filthy. It's just a fact of if you race in cities, then there's not really anywhere for the air to, or for the dust to go. Like, it's contained by buildings. Even if you clean the track, it comes back. You can't blow it off into anywhere. So you will always, with Formula E, have dirty tracks.
But on the race broadcast, Dario Franchian made the point about the accident, saying that one of the reasons why they happen is because the teams don't actually practice leaving the pit lane during their practice sessions. Well, during their pit stop practices.
No, because you're not really able to. So, like, you can fully swap cars during a practice session, but, like, well, I mean, Formula E practice sessions are not very long, and they're not designed to let you practice this. Every single garage is different. These garages are particularly tight, so the F1 pit lane, they're not designed for putting two cars that you jump between into. They're designed for putting one car that will be in there and then any pit stop action takes place outside. There are no timed pit stops of this type that take place inside a garage. Or at least I can't find a series where it happens. If somebody can, by all means, correct me, but I definitely can't find any top level. And all of the drivers find it very stressful. The teams find it very stressful. Nobody seems to really want it. Everyone agrees it is unsafe. As Andre said, it is inevitable that somebody is hit because there is nowhere for people to go. And if the driver is told to go, and the mechanic, because the Tachita mechanic thought he was clear, he wasn't. Yeah.
Why would the series want to make, like, eliminate the minimum pit stop time? Why would they want to do it, considering that next year's cars could go the whole distance without a car stop? It's only for the rest of this season.
I don't know. I suspect maybe they're experimenting with something possibly for the pit stop format next year. Otherwise, I have no idea. And I can't imagine that it's going to survive next round, to be honest. I think this is Formula E having a bit of a knockout qualifying moment.
Yeah. Next round's going to be Punta del Este in Uruguay. Yeah, next round's going to be Punta del Este. This is probably going to be a huge pivotal moment in the championship, with Jon-Erik Ver now leading by 12 points over Felix Rosenqvist, and now by 20 over Sam Bird.
Arguably, pit stops have decided the last two races.
Yes.
So this one, because Abt was so fast, and the last one because Tachita had the first, and actually Jeb and Andre were way out in front of us. In theory, could argue it, and I'm pretty sure that Daniel would have taken Turvey actually because he has so much more useful energy. So I think it would be a weak argument to say that they've decided the races, but you could.
Yeah, I mean, in the second half of that race, he was hunting down Oliver Turvey. He would not be denied that first victory. For real this time, we're serious. No disqualifications, no sticker discrepancies, no front wing discrepancies. Daniel Abt got the job done.
Like, we were all nervous and making jokes about this until Hazel quite politely put in our Discord server, like, yep, Parc Fermé is open, Daniel really has kept it this time. Like, just to make sure. We were like, yep, he has won. Yay, we could truly celebrate. Arguably one of the true funny men of the Formula E grid, and one of the true charismatic dudes in the field finally getting that first W, and the guy that's been a real grafter in the series as well. I feel like I'm suffering a bit of deja vu here talking about Daniel Apps in this way, but it, you know, I guess that's the nature of win chalked off the board already. But yeah, I mean, a great win for Daniel, and as mentioned before, like the second half of that race, he was so fast indeed. I mean, again, he ended up winning that race by 6.3 seconds in the end. I know a little bit of that was down to Turvey making a late error and almost letting Buemi in for second, but phenomenal pace. I mean, it's nice to see that despite Lucas Degrassi's bad luck out for the majority of the season, that Audi is still really fast. Like the pace of that car cannot be denied. Just I hope the reliability is still there, and obviously Audi ticks every scrutineering box available, so we don't get silly stuff like what happened earlier this season, I suppose. But yeah, great to
see
that.
I can tell you some really boring things about the reliability if you'd like.
Go for it.
Okay, so one of the reasons Lucas's car is so can flake the ass out of the wazoo is because he's had a broken inverter. The inverter is just broken. It needs sorting out. You can't really sort it out without full rehomologation, which you have to petition for, or you have to apply for 30 days in advance, so his car will be sorted for Kunta. But at the moment, they've got a car that they knew was broken rocking up to this E3, so, and I think they knew in Marrakesh as well. It was just that they couldn't manage to get it rehomologated in time.
Right. Well, I mean, despite that, I still voted him for driver of the day. I think he did a phenomenal job from the back of the grid to clear out a good few guys on the field, take the 5-second time penalty he had to serve in the pits, basically re-pass everybody again, and got up to 9th place in the end, and got the fastest lap of the race as well. So you got the bonus point as well for fastest lap.
Yeah, when he's not trying his hardest to be race car Banksy, Lucas Degrassi is a phenomenal driver.
Expectant father Lucas Degrassi. I don't think he actually did a particularly good race. This sounds really mean, because I spoke to him on Friday and we had a good chat, and he was really he's not chilling on this. He's not okay about how wrong it's going. He is really calm. He is very unhappy in terms of how the season is going. He said that he still thinks that they, and I'm not sure if he means they, him and Daniel, or they, him. I think he means they, him, can still win the most races of any driver of the season. Which I'm like, ooh. Well, that's just about mathematically possible, but blimey. Yeah, well, I mean, also, actually, I suppose there's been three different race winners so far. Four different race winners.
Yeah, he could still win. He could still win the most races and still lose the championship.
Oh, yeah, completely, which would be very Lucas. So, so I think Lucas isn't chilling about how crap his season is, but at the same time I don't think he's driving very well, and equally in the post-race press conference, and I asked Sebastian about this afterwards, Sebastian said, of course I'm not in contention for the championship because I'm just not fast enough. And I was like, well, that's a really fucking weird thing to hear Seb say. Like, he's essentially got the fastest car, he's undoubtedly one of the fastest drivers, and he was just like, it's not fast enough, car's not fast enough, I'm not fast enough, doing the best with what I've got, but it's just not working. And he did say some of it is the focus for next season,
right?
Which is a really, like, I kind of wanted to talk about this and coming soon in a very in-depth article. But yeah, this is the final year. This is fourth year of Formula E's first generation. Obviously, today it's been, if people were in Geneva, the opportunity to touch the sex the Generation 2 car is launched. Everyone is very aroused. The new era is going to be different. We're losing the car spot. A lot of elements will be different. There's a whole new battery. There's a whole new chassis. Everything about the way that drivers manage the race, everything about the way that teams manage the race, everything about the way that the powertrains work is going to be different. Well, I mean, not everything. I mean, it's still going to be a powertrain.
Oh, yes.
And there's also changes in terms of, I got into a really stupid internet argument with somebody earlier because it was 4 a.m. and I was awake with jet lag, which I'm really looking forward to jet lagging myself in these 6 days I'm back in the UK, and then re-jet lagging myself when I go to Uruguay, and then jet lagging myself again.
Yikes.
Ask me on the 21st what time it is, and we shall see. Somebody was saying that it was weird that Jaguar, when they announced the I-Pace, claimed that there were two motors in the car that are literally the same motor that's used in the Formula E car. Obviously, the motor is an incredibly small part of the powertrain. It's actually one of the less important parts in a weird way, even though it's the thing that actually does the driving, or that actually creates the power. They were like, oh, well, that's just not possible because a race car part would be so expensive. Well, actually, Formula E is cost limited, so they don't use unearthly materials. Like, it's not like, you know, the inverters made of vibranium and whatever.
Yes, Alejandro had to invade Wakanda for it.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Electro Daddy had connections, but Formula E has huge, huge challenges, and actually, the budgetary constraints are going to get tighter next year with introducing the Gen 2 car. So, without this, the initial spec season to kind of try and get their head around it as well. So, there's lots and lots of things that are going on. And what you might expect to see this year in the final stage of Generation 1 is that the dominant teams would carry up, that you'd see Renault continue to dominate. I don't think anyone would have come into this season thinking Renault were going to be like torrid midfield, hoping to score points and hoping to score a podium. But Buemi was like, third is good. Third is where we're at. Good. Which is kind of the thing that a challenger team like Mahindra might have thought last year. Obviously, actually, Mahindra had a win by this point. But they were fairly in contention. But that's kind of where you would have seen last season Mahindra. Or maybe even one of the much lower down teams. And, you know, Audi have absolutely dire. Like, I mean, they cannot get it together at all. And instead, you're seeing Jaguar, who, like, this is their second season. The first race of last season, they knew one of their four cars wouldn't start. That's how, like, utterly disorganized they were when they started. Because the challenge is just that big. And now they're third in the championship. They're behind Mahindra and Tachita. Tachita are a customer team. The whole grid has shaken itself up in such a bizarre way. The teams that should, because fundamentally nothing has particularly changed about the format of the races at least, should in theory still be dominant, are just falling apart, despite stable driver lineups, which is something that a lot of the teams lower down identified was one of the things that was really working with Renault and now Audi, is that they've always had the same two drivers, bar a few superstar points. But what we're seeing now is a complete shake-up of the grid. Like, okay, yes, Oliver Turvey went out from the lead last year here in Mexico. Would you have expected Neo to be seriously in contention this year?
No.
Not necessarily.
No, but it was great to see them up at the front, and it was great to see Oliver Turvey finally get that first Formula E podium, especially after what happened last year at Mexico City. As one Super GT superstar broke down and exited the lead of the race, another one took his place at the front for a little while.
Yes. I mean, it was almost surreal to me that that was Oliver's first podium. I actually had to check it because I was just like, he can't have never got a podium. That's just not possible. Like, surely he's got one, but then been disqualified or something weird at least. It's really good to see that paying off. Although that does raise the horrible, like, I don't want to talk about this. Nobody wants to talk about this. I think Luca Filippi is fired.
Yikes.
I think he might make it to Rome. But I think Luca Filippi is fired. He didn't even come to Media Pen in Mexico. Or at least I couldn't find him if he did.
Is Hazel dropping exclusives on this pod?
please don't
that
tell.
That is an exclusive.
We're getting the scoops.
I think... So, I mean, there might be lots of reasons he didn't come to MediaPen. Like, for all I know, he had food poisoning. I don't know. And he might have been there, and I just didn't see him because there was a real scrum. And he wasn't particularly a priority to speak to. But, Jerry Hughes' last race said, along with Mark Preston, that... he said that Luca needed to stop performing. Mark said Andre needed to stop performing. One of them has, and the other hasn't got the results. Now, arguably, Andre has a far better car to try and get results in. Luca has suffered appalling luck. He has consistently had sessions disrupted. Like Mauro Engel, he's just unjustifiably had a load of races ruined, no fault of his own, a lot of collisions, a lot of being turned round. Formula E is really cool in that respect, because you could also say, like, oh, well, look at Mauro Engel, who's technically more experienced compared to Edo, but actually Mauro's just had a series of really unfortunate incidents, mostly. Luca is just not having a good time, and I think he's going to make it to Rome and not much further. There are so many drivers trying to get into Formula E. I wrote an article for Drive Tribe last week about this, but it is brutal, the lack of chance that you're going to be given to prove that you can drive these cars. And I hope I'm wrong, but I'm really worried about Luca.
Yeah, just in case he needs a backup, Ma Qinghua is the team's designated reserve driver according to the NOI website.
Oh,
he was in Mexico.
It's like one of those...
fast in the simulator. He's faster than he was faster than Jeb in the simulator before last season, and he's faster than some of the others. I would guess, because he's about the same. Tom Blomqvist is also occasionally fast, but he's phenomenally skinny, and I think he needs to just put on a bit of. Sheer force to wrestle the cars, because there's no power steering in Formula E.
As we've heard, Formula E is very easy. It's far less physical, and it's so much easier to compete. We've learned this past weekend.
Well, context is important here. It's important to know that these cars have less downforce than a traditional single seater.
Oh, God.
We should just move on.
As we know, less downforce makes it way easier to go around a corner.
Yes, especially with no power steering.
With a car weighing over 880 kilograms.
Right.
Like, 880 kilograms is like I'm trying to think how many of me that is. So that's basically like picking up 10 of me and dragging, like if you get like 10 of me drunk and then try and drag us all around the corner.
What a visual image that is.
No, it's more like 12 of me. It's like if you got like handcuffed together 12 of me and let us get like wayward and drunk, then try to get us to, that's like dragging a Formula E car around the corner under regenerative braking.
Oh Jesus.
Oh dear. It's like I'm trying to like, damn. That's like a Cadillac ATS, like in a single seater.
That's a terrifying thought.
And it's all at the back. Like if you ever watch, obviously the streets and circuits are incredibly bumpy, and if you watch them go over, you quite often see like literally the front kind of get air because the battery is so heavy at the back.
Yeah, because like I've seen.
Not to say that a Formula One car isn't heavy. Of course it is, and so are all cars. So are GT cars. So are like, you know, stock cars. So are carts to some extent. You know, like anything, its speed is fast. And yes, you don't pull the high G in Formula E that you do in Formula One. So the strain on your neck is less, but the upper body strength is brutal. The races are shorter, but you do all of the sessions in one day, so actually the amount of driving you have to do over the course of the day is vast. And you need to be at high performance at all times. There's no off, really. You will get very little rest even during a practice session. And there's very little gap between any of the sessions. So, I mean, you know, let's talk about common order. Let's talk about the fact that I didn't interview Carmen Jordan because I wasn't very interested in her thoughts about the season one show car. She didn't do a test. She did 6 laps in the season one show car.
It was a demo run. It was not a test.
The same demo run that Four had, basically.
Yes.
No, but I've been offered that demo run. Sean O'Kane from Verge has done that demo run.
Yeah, like I know a number of journalists who have done it.
Yeah, like it's not a special thing. Oh, no, like I turned it down because I didn't want to trash a car in front of like all the people who I routinely have to interview.
I demand you do one now. But... I demand this. I want pictures and everything.
I would have if it hadn't been in Valencia. Well, no, because it was Valencia, and I just thought I was going to trash it on those trains. And yeah, but anyway, because some dude didn't turn up for a run, so they said I have a crack at it. But yes, it's a tuned down, power steered up, so that car does have power steering. Show a car. Like it's not the energy management, it's not anything. And like to her credit, she did talk about the fact that there's lots of things to manage in the series. But and whoever asked that loaded question, I didn't go and interview her. However, I have to say that my male peers did, and it is my male peers who have published these articles for clips, where they've almost spoken about women as though. And like call out to basically everyone, people who I like and respect and people who are my friends have done this. Every single article is worded like women are an alien species. And now I'm wasting my time writing some huge scientific rebuttal. Selena Gade issued a very fierce rebuttal. Tatiana Calderon, now Sauber F1 test driver, not developed driver, moved forward to test. Said something quite critical, I think, or at least certainly I can't imagine she's amused by the concept. Robin Frenz, former teammate of a female Formula E driver, came out with some criticism. I think Jev had a go as well, also former teammate of Simona. It's just nobody wants this shit.
I mean like
it's mean, exactly what a petrolhead driven idiot who wants to degrade both Formula E and women wants somebody to say.
Yeah, I mean, like, what's...
And it's a great PR move.
Yeah, like, what's the point of having a go at Carmen Jordan? It only benefits Carmen Jordan.
It's a low-hanging fruit I didn't even bother attempting to get into on Twitter, because I was just sitting there going, guys, you're just going to give her exactly what you want if you keep putting articles of her name out there. That's why I was... I didn't even really want to get into this, to be honest with you, because it's just... I'm like feeding the hype machine at this point, and I really don't want to do that. I feel like it's a waste of time. But I'm pulling a spade here. It's like... Carmen Jordan is only looking out for Carmen Jordan here. She's not really looking out for other women in motorsport. And hey, like, as an evergreen tweet that Will Buxton put out a couple of days ago, it's like, hey, it's got us all talking again. And I'm like, guys, we're taking the bait on this every fucking time it happens now. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, it's not going to help anyone if the only time we ever discuss women in motorsport is when Carmen Jordan is mentioned, because it's never going to be in a positive light.
Yeah, it's the same quote shit every time. It's like, Carmen Jordan says, like, every woman in motorsport that is worth a damn chips in and says how wrong she is. All the journalists go out and write quotes about said quotes and produce articles and get more clicks. Repeat apt nauseum until something else happens again and the cycle repeats itself. It's really irritating. People, cut it out already. Tired of this.
And it makes the whole situation look ridiculous to outsiders when everyone is criticizing what seems to be the most important woman in motorsport. Like, because that's what it looks like from the outside.
Yeah, and people that lack nuance and aren't educated enough to really get into it as a series are going to say, oh, look, Carmen Jordan, she's really important. She must have been a great driver or something along those lines. And then they get the wrong end of the stick when they realize, oh, her racing career has been terrible.
I guess all women are terrible.
But, yes, exactly. People will jump to that conclusion.
I mean, like, not to be funny, but you all are dudes.
Yeah.
And like, as a thing that, and I've spent a lot of this weekend like really wrestling with imposter syndrome, really struggling with kind of like feeling a little bit like I was shut up the boys club, and like you know, I'm in fucking Mexico covering a race, like I this really is my job. And there is something so grim about watching. Like, I can't leave it alone. I don't have a choice to leave it alone. I don't have a choice to not comment on this.
Yeah.
That's not something I can sit down and do. Because if I don't comment on it, then I accept it. And because, like, you know, what I would like is for dudes to stop publishing this is an interesting thing. I would like dudes to stop taking this seriously, and I would like to see more diverse coverage of the huge numbers of women in my school who do things. I'd like to see more women commissioned, obviously partly because I'm one of them, but like, you know, there are huge numbers of women with expert opinions in motorsport, none of which would come out like that. I'd also like to see dudes ask less leading questions. Yes, okay, Carmen fell into a question trap, sure. You know, she was asked if this car was better to drive for women. Who the fuck asked that? It wasn't a woman.
Yeah.
I guarantee.
And it's just so frustrating. It is on so many different levels. This is so frustrating.
This is my time to jump in and just remind you, Hazel, you are doing fantastic work.
I've just realized I need to go on board a plane.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
So, quick wrap up of Mexico. I think that this race has been as crazy as ever. The way that it's been weird that it has, it's not by unlikely performances, but by really how utterly snow globe grade frothed up this year, that there are drivers putting in incredible individual performances, but very few teams have really managed it. And even the ones that are, like Mahindra, have bad days. Tashita didn't have a great week. And then you see somebody like Jaguar, who traditionally have never really managed to get even a balance between qualifying and race, let alone both of their drivers, took home their biggest points. So Formula E continues to surprise. It continues to be weird. And I think bring on Punta and my inevitable... I mean, you know, if you get me to record something after Punta, then, like, Hazel Detlef was to be a thing. But yeah, thank you for having me, dudes. And I'm going to go and get on a flight to Toronto, the obvious place to go en route home. I will speak to you all soon.
Alrighty, Hazel, thanks for joining us. Have a safe journey back home. And try not to have the jet lag destroy you on the way back. Have a good one.
Alright, love you guys. Bye.
Bye.
That is Hazel Southwell of Crash.net and other wonderful publications joining us live from Mexico City en route to Toronto, en route back to the United Kingdom. Have a safe trip back. From what I saw, the highlights, Mexico City was good.
Yeah, it was. It was a good race to watch. Series, the future of the series, it seems interesting. The new Gen 2 car that was launched, it looks excellent. It looks better than the computer renders that we saw earlier. Just seeing it in like cameras, like it just looks so great.
I don't know how I feel about Nissan's new colors for the upcoming season.
Yeah, I hope that they make some touches before the team actually, you know, runs it.
Venturi's looks like something out of the film Speed Racer.
Hey, don't criticize that movie. That is a great movie.
That's one of our greatest cinema institutions.
Yes.
That's
that,
no joke.
That is, I kid you not, that is the Wachowski's best film. Don't at me.
Brother Ryan loves that movie, so I can't say I'm totally surprised at that prognostication. But
yeah,
hey,
yeah, it's better than all three Matrix movies.
Yikes, I mean, we don't tell jokes. We only state facts on the Motorsport 101 podcast.
In what universe is that a thing? Oh dear!
But yes, yeah. If you don't know, the car has been officially unveiled at the Geneva Motor Show, as mentioned earlier by Hazel. The car will have a top speed of 280 kilometers an hour, which in old money is 174.9 miles an hour.
Cool.
It'll go 0 to 100 kilometers in 2.8 seconds. It is much faster. It is much faster than the current generation car. Man, oh man, it is probably going to be a handful. It is going to be a handful.
I can't wait for this hot mess to get here later this year. It's going to be great. it sounds all sorts of fun. It looks fantastic in person. I didn't even get to see it until I saw a friend of the show, Katie, stick it on Instagram as part of the Geneva Motor Show. So thanks, Katie. Appreciate you doing the Lord's work for me on that one. But quick run now of the results from Mexico City, in case you weren't with us on this one. Daniel Abt winning by 6.3 seconds in the end, ahead of Oliver Turvey in second. Narrowly beating Sebastian Buemi over the line in third. He's just about cracked a smile at that third place result in the end. A very small one, apparently. Nelson Piquet in fourth, you just followed along, didn't quite make the best of his usable energy to get onto the podium positions in the end. But hey, as mentioned, with him and his teammate Mitch Evans in sixth, Jaguar are now third in the championship. Who would have guessed that a year ago? That's awesome for them. Jon-Erik Vern for T-Cheetah sticking it up there again in fifth place. Mitch Evans in sixth. Shame that our boy Da Costa fell down to seventh there after a fantastic qualifying effort. He qualified originally in second. Had to start, from fourth in the end after the Super Bowl result was scratched off the board for an underweight car. God damn it, Andretti. Our boy Mortara in 8th there, Lucas Degrassi in 9th of the fastest lap of the race as well, so he gets the bonus point in 9th, and Alex Lynn rounding off the points in 10th. A quick shout out to Joan D'Ambrosio for driving for that really struggling Dragon team as well. He was just outside in 11th place as well. Just the 3 DNFs on that one. Nicholas Prost, as we mentioned, Felix earlier, and Nick Heinfeld as well, also failed to finish. But, double DNF for Mahindra. not the nicest result in the world for him. Looking at the championship standings real quick. In the drivers, we have John Erik Vern still on top by 12 points ahead of Felix Rosenqvist in second. Sam Bird in third on 61 points, despite the donut he produced this weekend, sadly. Buemi up to fourth now on 52 points, with Nelson Piquet in fifth on 45. In the team standings, Tichita still leads by 9 points of 99 over Mahindra in second on 90. Jaguar closing them in a little bit now, though. They're taking 10 points out of the gap. They're on 74 points now, ahead of DS Virgin and Renault Edams now. Virgin in fourth with 70 points and Renault Edams with 59. Should we talk about some Formula One, fellas?
Yeah, oh. Although I should, we should point out we have breaking news dropping in. Of course, our friend Christopher Hard, who was on our IndyCar season previews at this event, Ty Burns Racing announcing their first entry into the Indianapolis 500 with Connor Daly, with the United States Air Force as a sponsor.
Of course, of course. The most American car possible is the one that Connor Daly gets to drive.
Yes, like, and this is in a partnership with Dale Coyne Racing. Dale Coyne Racing with Tom Burns Racing and the U.S. Air Force at the 102nd running of the Indianapolis 500.
I can just smell the American apple pie in the background as we talk about this as we speak. It's just so, it's so U.S. of A right here. Tell him the joke. Go on, you know you want to.
Oh, God, because on big, bold letters in the side of the car, it says USAF. You know, United States Air Force. But it should be more like U.S. as fuck.
King in the sin bin. again.
God damn.
Oh, jeez. Like, King is turned into a real pun enforcer on this show, unfortunately.
But we never actually got to talk about it in detail. With the launch of the car, a lot of teams unveiled their liveries, including, for the first time, the Nissan Formula E car, Nissan being replacing Renault next year. Who's excited for that project? Nissan back in top line international motorsports, even though it's like it's all but confirmed that Buemi and Prost will be their drivers in the first season. Who do you think would eventually down the line maybe replace the Nico Prost or Sebastian Buemi at Nissan?
I have to say Jan Martinborough should be at the top of the list. He has single-seater experience. He's tested Formula E cars, I believe. I believe he did one of those virtual races during the first couple of seasons.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, yeah, and he's Nissan and Nismo's golden child.
Yes, the golden child.
That's not a bad shout at all. Let's have a look here. But yeah, I'm only just seeing this Nissan livery for the first time myself. This is a live reaction, and ooh. Yeah, I'm not sure about the colours on that.
Yeah, it's very corporate.
That is very corporate black and silver there.
Speaking of very corporate and bland and overused colours, Toyota revealed the new Supra. The racing version of it. Well, the racing concept version.
Damn, it's only a concept.
It's only a concept. It's built to GTE specifications, and it will be in Gran Turismo Sport in an upcoming update, but it has no plans to
use. As soon as you said concept, I was like, that's going to be in GT Sport next month, isn't it? And there it is. Oh, it's like, oh, God. It's just nice seeing a Supra again, even if I think it's a bit ugly. I don't know what's going on with its teeth at the front there. They're very big. Not the biggest fan of that, but look at the size of that diffuser on the back. Good lord. You could park my arse on that. My god, that is huge. Like I'm about two Hazels, okay? So like, just to put it into perspective, when it came to about, you know, drunk downforce and corners, about one and a half Hazel. So that is an enormous diffuser. It's bigger than my future. Nice to see a Supra back. That's always fun.
Yeah, McLaren also has a GT racing concept, the Senna GTR.
That car. That's I have feelings and not good feelings about that car.
It is still ugly as sin.
It's ugly as sin, and it's not going to race. Goodness, that diffuser. Goodness, that's just That's just one of those things you clip onto like a beard trimmer.
Yeah, it makes next year's Formula E diffuser look tame.
Like, that is like a diffuser on steroids. It's the Bradley Wiggins of diffusers. My God. that thing is huge. Like, am I right in saying that Senna GTR is like, it just doesn't fit, like, the regulations for any major racing series right now, and it's never going to actually race anywhere.
It is a track special. The inside line going into this was that we were believe that this was going to be the launch of McLaren's GTE program, because we are coming up on the 25th anniversary of their Le Mans victory in 95. It may still happen, but it's not going to be with this car.
Yeah. And that's like, could be the only saving grace for that car, because that's the only way how you can make it like an ugly car attractive if it wins.
That is true. They're saying more than 825 horsepower and more than 2,000 pounds, almost a metric ton of downforce generating off that enormous like diffuser that basically you could build a house on. that is quite a stunning thing right there, isn't it? My God. You'll probably see it on Top Gear next year. Knowing you'll be part of McLaren's driver program or some sort, like Ferrari do with their FXXK. That should be fun.
I think now we can talk about Formula One.
Yeah, because we have a lot to get to that's not test related.
We do. So let's get into the test. And, well, the first one at Catalunya was, let's be honest, it was kind of a wash, really, wasn't it? Yeah. Figuratively, it's like, and literally.
It's like, we know how the rain in Spain falls, but how does the snow fall?
Apparently directly on circuit, unfortunately. turns out that, yeah, the first test was essentially a write-off. Track was ridiculously cold pretty much the entire test, like apparently as low as 0 degrees in some cases. That's Celsius, thankfully, not Fahrenheit. We don't talk American on this show, despite the fact we have two of them on here on a regular basis. It's still my show, damn it. We talk Europe on here.
Whoa, you live in Britain. That's questionable.
You had to go there, didn't you? I didn't agree to this. a ridiculously cold track, rain affected, snow affected, which led to, I must admit, I rag on them a lot, but Sky Sports F1's sense of humour regarding Mercedes Snowman was kind of hilarious. Like, props to Craig Slater for making all the jokes about Mercedes building a snowman on track during the test, and then teasing the fact it had melted in the back. But then they found it later in the day in a cooling tank, and everybody was happy. Like, Sky Sports News got a real kick out of it for the whole day, which I thought was funny. But sadly, not much of a relevant test in terms of actual numbers and figures.
Yes, Bottas led the first day, Vettel led the second, Hamilton led the fourth and final day after the test of the snow. But all that matters is that McLaren and Fernando Alonso topped the third session.
Woo! Yeah! Nando's back! Yep!
With a 206.
Oh. 206.
I think Fernando could cycle around that about the same speed. someone get his esports team out there. And I might be able to crack the car a bit quicker than that around there. We had all the jokes for McLaren being on top, because let's be honest, they've not had the best time of testing so far. It's been one of the biggest takeaways from this. Fast forwarding a little bit here to day two of the second test, which happened today as we're recording this on March 6th. Two breakdowns for Stoffel Vandoorne on the day. And I think going to our man Luke Smith, they're actually done less laps of testing this year than they did this time last year. With apparently a better power unit in the back.
Apparently.
Keep
that in mind for later.
The stat is, if McLaren does not get back out on track today, the team will be just 10 laps better off this year than they were this time last year. 298 laps versus 288 laps. I told you so.
It's like, I think Luke also said, like, one of the journalists in the media room who came out and said, So at what point does it become a crisis?
It's been a crisis.
Because like, the funny thing is that Sky Sports F1 literally just tweeted out an article saying the headline of, "There is absolutely no drama," says Eric Boullier.
Translation, there is a lot of drama. They're a little faster. They're a little faster than they were admittedly, but they have to be looking at what the reliability that Toro Rosso was getting out of their Honda engines, and they got to think, maybe they don't regret breaking up because it had gotten so bad, but they are going to regret letting it get as bad as it did between McLaren and Honda in the first place to begin with.
Yeah, and like, also, rumor is that they're not, Honda didn't bring Toro Rosso a power unit that they're going to use this year. They brought them a modified version of last year's power unit, which makes it even worse because that's the same power unit McLaren was using last year.
Oh no! I didn't even realize that. I think Cam like half said it to me during our hangout on last Saturday. But if they're using the 2017 Honda, McLaren look like sheep at the moment. That is not a good look. Oh dear. Oh dear, oh dear. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a problem here. what can you say about McLaren that hasn't already been said yet at this point? It's like, at what point do we say, you know, maybe it was the team and not the power unit they were running? Because this is the guys that were making all that noise saying that, hey, if we had a power unit, we have like Red Bull's level of aero. And I'm like, you sure about that, fellas? Yeah. Like, are you really sure about that? Because
it's been over 5 years since they've won a race.
Yeah, it's like anything less than top six finishes for McLaren this year, and this is a bust. And does it look like they're going to be anywhere near that this year?
It's not an ideal start. And I wouldn't be surprised if they turned around because, again, by the end of last season, McLaren had actually turned around to where they were genuinely solidly in the midfield.
They were, yeah, absolutely. They were in the points on a pretty much regular basis towards the end of the year in the top eight, I would say. But it's not good. Also, I'm very impressed at you two. None of you have actually tried to convince me that Ferrari are a contender yet. I'm impressed. Like,
because I don't believe it either.
Say what?
Ferrari are fast, but they have not shown anything that they are. You know,
With all the mileage that their engine has gotten, and Vettel leading 2 out of 5 days of testing, you don't see it being any different than last year.
I don't think the margin is big enough. It isn't like they're not undisputedly faster than McLaren. I mean, than Mercedes. Wow, they are undisputedly fast.
Whoa, what year is this? 1999.
Oh my god!
King with the V10 throwback.
It's Eddie Irvine's year, folks.
But yeah, I don't think the margin's big enough to say that they're undisputedly faster than Mercedes.
Wow. I'm at peace with this. It's like I'm polishing my bronze medal, ready for Seb at the end of the year. It's going well. We're going to plan. We're locking down that second in the constructors. It's looking solid.
Oh, you don't think Seb's going to be able to get second in the drivers?
He'd have to be spectacular to get second. Like, for all the shit we gave Val, he still scored over 300 points last year. And I think Seb would probably, with 21 races, he'd probably need something like 320, 330. To have a realistic chance at second. That's a big ask. And I'm not sure Ferrari's going to win 5 times again next year. Like, that's a biggie, especially with Red Bull breathing down their necks. I think Red Bull are right on par with I think where Ferrari are at the moment. The thing about Red Bull is they get better as the season goes on. Like, they are definitely faster on the back end than they are at the front of the season. They get better as the year goes on. So, I'm not convinced on this yet. Everyone that's tried to tweet me about this, trying to convince me to get on the hype train, it's not going to happen, people. I am off the narcotic, okay? Get it out of your heads. This is not going to happen. I am not getting on this again. I will happily accept my third place. If we get the 4 wins, I'll be happy. I will take it. Accept your new silver overlord, okay?
I want to pivot to one other thing here as well as we're wrapping up this testing discussion. Fourth place. That seems to be the most interesting battle. Who looks like they're ahead of the quote-unquote the LMP2 category, the best of the rest behind Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull.
I've been impressed by Nico Hülkenberg so far.
Yeah, that Renault is looking pretty good. Pretty good.
The Renault's looking mean. It's kicking out here, smugly smiling, knowing that, hey, a Hülkenberg signs-led Renault team that might actually be good this year could be very fun indeed.
As they should have been, because it's year three of the project and they're a factory team.
But yeah, this is kind of where they should be now by year three, and it's all going to plan so far. By the time Hülkenberg was lapping in the 120s around there in dry conditions during the first test, that Renault looked quick. I said to Hazel last week on the hangout when the first test was happening, I said it's actually going pretty much by the form book so far, outside of maybe Toro Rosso's reliability, and I think Renault being a little bit higher than I thought they were going to be. Besides that, I think it's been pretty samey compared to last year.
Yeah.
The top three look clearly head and shoulders above the rest. The battle for fourth could actually be a bit more interesting with Renault. Looks like they're in the mix now with Force India and Williams.
Force India, that's team to be named.
Oh, sorry, team Force, or should it be team TBA, basically?
But it's not going to be team Force. It's not going to have anything with Force in the name of it, because they tried to do that last year, and everybody just squatted all the domains, apparently.
Yep, we're taking all the website names here, bro. Sorry about that. I want $80,000.
You want to be team Force, you got to pay us all the money.
So are we still so I'm still optimistic about the team, formerly known as Jordan, formerly known as Midland, formerly known as MF1, formerly known as Spiker, based in Northamptonshire, which is right outside of Silverstone Circuit.
They still have Sergio Perez and Esteban Ocon, and they still have a car that looks like a drumstick lollipop, and that's not a bad thing. I love a good drumstick.
My fear is that they won't be able to keep up with the pace of development, because besides changing their team name, they're also looking for a new owner.
Oh, yeah, that could be a problem. and their biggest threat could be a full-on French factory team. That could be a problem. It's not like you're competing against Williams, who have been penny-pinching for the last 2 years. They're competing against a full-blooded factory team now. And hey, like McLaren will get better as the year goes on. I'm dead certain on that too. I mean, again, they're the butt of everybody's jokes right now, but they will improve. They always do towards the end of the season. So, like, I don't think Force India is going to be the lock-on fourth place team they were last year, where they could have finished fourth with basically one car. Think of the money you could have saved Force India. But I think besides that, I think it's been pretty by the form book, really. I mean, like Sauber near the back end, Renault probably a little bit higher up than I would have thought, Toro Rosso a little bit higher up than I would have thought because of their surprisingly, reliable all of a sudden 2017 engine. we'll have to wait and see once they start the 2018 engine in there, we'll see what really happens. But for now, a promising start from those guys. More on the test probably on next week's show, depending on how test number two goes down and anything funny happens,
and
or if
McLaren
has more breakdowns.
Yeah, and I have some Formula One in Australia news.
More scoops on this episode of Motorsports 101.
Scoops.
Well, it seems like our buddies over at Australian Supercars are kind of quite happy that they have a relationship with Formula One where they can run a championship round as a support race to the Australian Grand Prix. And they are looking to expand this to other Formula One races in the Asia-Pacific region, with an eye at specifically aimed towards having an Australian Supercars race support the Singapore Grand Prix.
Oh my god, if it's under the lights, sign me the F up!
Wow, now that could be fun. Yes. I'm here for that. I am here for an Aussie V8 race at Singapore. That would be pretty lit.
Yeah, they don't want it to be like a short-term venture, because they want a long-term contract because they're afraid that they won't be able to renew a short-term contract. What happened, like, when they tried to expand to Malaysia or the Circuit of the Americas, where it kind of, it was a one-off deal and it kind of just fell apart after that. They want a long-term deal with Formula One. The first one that they're aiming for is Singapore. Hopefully they want other races in the Asia-Pacific market. Maybe they say maybe Shanghai would be also on the table. They're not really looking at Japan.
Hmm. Singapore could work. That could definitely work.
Yeah, they race well on street courses anyway. Yeah. Suzuka would be very interesting because it doesn't seem like the track that would suit a V8 supercar.
No.
Which just adds to the challenge.
I mean, that makes it more fun, RJ. But God, I sign me up for Singapore. That would be great. Like all those fans of the show that keep begging me to watch Aussie supercars. This might be your chance, people.
Yeah, if it became, it would. I'm pretty sure it would help both series if supercars supported Formula One because it would. There would be a decent crossover of fans to go to the other side.
I would, and I'm Mr. Supercar, hard-nosed, not brilliant, wanting to expand my motorsport game fan here, so that probably says quite a lot right there.
Tatiana Calderon, as we'd mentioned, has a new test driver role with Sauber F1 team, Bermeo's official test driver, and the timing of the announcement, as we talked about earlier, could not have been any better.
Oh, that's sweet, delicious irony right there.
Yeah.
Congrats to Tatiana. That's a really cool gig for her. I've already been told that she's going to get like drives in a old spec Sauber already to test out as well. So it's not just going to be her in a simulator all day.
I would like to see her in a current car because remember the last time we had a female driver at Sauber drive a former car.
Yeah,
she who
that's
shall not
true.
Be named.
different set of circumstances. I'm hoping we will see Tatiana Calderon do some FP1s. We also had some Formula 2 testing at Le Castellet, or Paul Ricard, ooh, or France. Lando Norris was fastest. Stop me if you've heard this before. Lando Norris is very good. He led both the morning session with a 156 in the wet, and then the dry session with a 143 in the dry in the afternoon.
Spoiler alert, Lando Norris is fast as hell. We'll probably be saying that a lot over the course of the rest of this calendar year. Yeah, I did see that. I was like, yeah, Lando Norris is good at the race cars. Again, like you're all shocked listening to this as we speak.
Yeah, like, it's certainly shaping up to be a year where Carlin, despite sitting a year out, come back to the series quick as ever.
Oh boy, it helps when you've got a super prospect in your car, that's for sure.
And let's just say, because of, you know, the restricted driver selection at Primo, we're going to have a really close championship fight in Formula 2 this year.
Oh goodness, that's right. Yeah, you've got Norris in contention, you have Nick DeVries, who is still going to be a very solid leader of that Prima team. You have George Russell at ART,
his teammate Jack Aiken at ART. You have DeVries in the Prima. It is.
And I'm really also silently impressed by how Sergio Sette Câmara is coming along in a second year in these cars.
Indeed. Look to look out for, and that will keep our eyes peeled as the season gets underway next weekend. Actually, no, this weekend. It's actually the weekend after, actually. My bad.
Yes.
I think it starts over Bahrain, doesn't it? Yeah, my apologies. My bad. I'm a bit rusty.
King, it's time. It's time to go over the top.
As a certain person likes to say on another streaming service, are you ready?
Oh, God. I'm gonna mute my microphone for the next half hour. Catch you later, gentlemen.
well, it's not all good news, Dre. So you can stick around to, you know, throw some shots in.
Oh really? okay. Let me put my seatbelt on here in this racing chair of mine.
May
like,
I do
please,
the honors of
more.
Reading the press release?
Yes.
Formula One announced on March the 1st that they are going to launch Formula One TV, a live Grand Prix subscription service. F1 TV is Formula One's over-the-top platform and marks F1's biggest adventure in its digital transformation to date. Formula One fans will get commercial-free live streams of each race with multi-language commentary. In addition, the service will provide exclusive access to all 20 driver onboard cameras throughout every race session. F1 TV Pro will have unique feeds not available on any other platform with the capability of multi-level personalization. Subscribers will be able to choose the content they view, how, and when they access this. All of practice, all of qualifying, and every race will be offered live along with press conferences and pre- and post-race interviews. Subscriber will be able to watch live races of the main support series, the FIA Formula 2 Championship, GP3 Series, and Porsche Super Cup, among others. During the season, F1 TV will be made available in four different languages, English, French, German, and Spanish, and will appear in nearly two dozen markets at launch, including Germany, France, the United States, Mexico, Belgium, Austria, Hungary, and much of Latin America, as well as Azerbaijan. Access will be initially available through desktop and web, with mobile apps and TV apps being phased in on Amazon, Apple, and Android, enabling users to watch on a range of different devices at no additional cost. Pricing for F1 TV Pro will be offered on a monthly basis of USD 8 to 12, so that's 8 to 12 US dollars, and annual rates will be priced according to market.
Glorious. Glorious.
Fuck you.
That malaise you hear from Dre is because of the fact that because Sky Sports and Formula One are locked into an exclusive television deal through the end of the 2021 season, the United Kingdom, F1's biggest market, and they will be very proud to tell you that they're F1's biggest market, they're not getting F1 TV.
Not in its direct, unfiltered form. Apparently, Sky is kind of entertained with FOM offering F1 TV in the UK via Sky Sports. So you need to get a Sky Sports package to get F1 TV.
Exactly. Like it's no coincidence that our streaming provider, Now TV, which is basically Sky Sports in a nutshell, basically no one else buys it for anything else. No one buys Now TV for the movies. But
I'm pretty sure Sky also owns Now TV.
Yeah, exactly. So like that's their streaming service. And for people that haven't got smart TVs, if you haven't, what's stopping you? It's 2018, for God's sake. But anyway, as I was saying. Those guys that are on Now TV, they had a deal the other day where you could basically get Sky Sports for the rest of the year for £150 straight up, which is basically, do the math, Dre, real quick, about £10 a month. Like, apparently it's over 50% off. So Sky are immediately trying to counter-program by saying, yeah, here, we'll give you Sky Sports like for the rest of the year at like half price if you pay it up front, basically. So.
No. Yeah, this is probably one of the unintended positives of there being an official F1 broadcast from them themselves, where it creates competition in broadcasting, where everyone else has to improve their service to compete with F1 TV, if they are competing with F1 TV in any way, shape, or form.
So like the French and the Germans and like ESPN, which is basically just going to be copying Sky Sports' broadcast anyway.
But with awkwardly placed commercial breaks in between, because we know we're not going to get commercial-free broadcasts of Formula One. Are you kidding us?
Are you kidding? Like, because F1 TV exists, ESPN can be like, yeah, we don't have commercials anywhere.
We don't have to try.
Yeah.
We don't have to put Stephen A. Smith in to hype the pre-race show with Will Buxton.
Sigh. Double sigh.
But yeah. Another thing I'm excited about is that they haven't made it 100% clear how it'll be formatted, but there will be historical content provided on F1 TV. I don't know whether it's the entire archives and full race and full race coverage of every single race, but it's something. It's something to, you know, wet your lips with anticipation for.
Yeah, and for those wondering, Formula One's video library, the official video library, dates all the way back to 1981.
Yes, so they have every race broadcast from the 1981 season until present available in their archives. Don't know if they'll make it all available at once, because I'm pretty sure we'll get to talking about comparing it to other streaming services in a bit, but other services did not offer their entire archive at once. Even though they had much more content than Formula One has.
Oh, just excuse me when I get like 3 ounces of bourbon and add it to my Snapple. This pains me because I've been like I've made mention of this for years on and off this show, talking about how they could use their archival footage in some sort of on-demand service, and here we are. In 2018, it has finally fucking happened. And of course, when it happens, the UK can't get it because of fucking Sky. Of course!
I mean,
I knew this was going to happen.
You can get it, but only through Sky.
And they're not the only major market that shut out. I believe Australia's off the list, Brazil is off the list, Japan was off the list of initial markets that would have it available.
Funnily enough, most, but not all of Italy is off the list. If you look at the official release, you could see in the S category, they have South Tyrol, which is a province, a German-speaking province of Italy in the north of the country that has access to Sky TV. But somehow in the rest of the country, they're not going to be able to purchase, F1 TV.
There's going to be a flock of immigrants to that province in the next month. Holy shit. oh my god.
You know what I'm excited about? I'm excited about what this could do for the Feeder Series Championships, because here's a reliable streaming service that's going to put the Formula 2 and the GP3 drivers out in front of everybody's eyeballs.
Yes, all the support races will be on F1 TV. If they could put the support series archives on F1 TV, that'd be great. Because, I'd like to see some of those entertaining GP2 races that are not available anywhere, literally anywhere.
It's a very good point. It's a very, very good point.
And I think this is a time where we should start our comparisons, because one of the features that I love most about the WWE Network, which is the streaming service for World Wrestling Entertainment, is that anytime you have when a new superstar returns, or when Kurt Angle came back to World Wrestling Entertainment, he spent, about a decade away. Maybe a lot of people haven't seen his content. They made basically a playlist of network content of all of Kurt Angle's best matches from the late 90s and early 2000s. They could just go in, they play a brief highlight reel of all the promos and build up to a match, then play the match. And the next video is the same thing for a different match. And oh my god, if they could do that for the GP2 stars, or maybe Kimi Räikkönen when he was relevant.
Whoa! Shots fired, bruh!
Hey, it's true. It's been a while since he's actually contended for a world championship.
This is true.
If they could curate historical content and even curate historical feeder series content to make people care about, the younger drivers and make clue in new fans and why people care about the veterans in the series, it could actually help Formula One.
Absolutely.
How many people do you think that would get on board for this first thing?
Oh dear. Ooh, let's get into that. Well, apparently Formula One themselves believe that the audience that they're aiming for is 5 million people. What they believe is 1% of their customer base.
5 million.
How does that compare to other sports streaming services within their first year? Like, let's say WWE Network or UFC Fight Pass.
Well, WWE Network, which launched in 2014, I believe.
Yeah.
In their first year, they did not break 1 million people. They actually, didn't break 2 million people after, nearly 4 years out. And Fight Pass, after 1 year in, they did not break 500,000 people. So, again, UFC Fight Pass being the most recent example, they broadcast all the UFC pay-per-views. I would say Fight Pass is a better example than the WWE Network. The WWE Network, still, the weekly WWE programming is still free on television.
Right.
While the UFC, they less frequent, like they don't put their big main event matches on their free shows, which are not weekly either. They're maybe once, like once a month or once every other month.
Yeah.
So it's more akin to Fight Pass, and there's also less original content on Fight Pass. So it's a WWE TV would be more similar to UFC Fight Pass.
Yeah, like 5 million sounded ambitious, like even before you mentioned enough, the other numbers to put it into context, really.
And this is 5 million without their largest market.
Yeah, without the UK, which you mentioned, like basically the UK covers 10% of their audience. That seems ambitious, to say the least.
And there are also other key, like, markets that make the numbers seem bigger than, like, that makes that 500 million audience base seem larger than it appears. It's also not available in the People's Republic of China. So, just put it
through. Oh!
And, you know, RJ mentioned it's not available in Brazil, either, or most of Italy. So, it's gonna be a reach to get to 5 million.
And one thing that also affects China's numbers is that they're still one of the few countries that has their F1 races on free-to-air television.
Yeah.
In the most populous country in the world.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
So 5 million is going to be... I think 1 million is going to be a reach.
Yeah, I think they can get to 1 million if you only consider, like, US, France, Germany, just those places alone could push them over the top of 1 million. They're not getting a 5.
They're not getting
no chance.
Five.
No chance.
And, I don't think it'll cause any other particular, like, big issues, but they're gonna, besides the races, having the races live, ad-free, is fantastic. But Absolutely. As the WWE also learned very quickly, having stuff for free, it's not going to draw as wide of a net as you think you're going to get, where the WWE pretty much immediately realize we're going to have to produce original content if we want to entice customers to sign up for this.
Yeah. Especially in a more on-demand heavy market now, where people aren't watching programming live anymore. They're sitting on it. They'll watch it when it's more convenient. I don't even watch Top Gear live anymore. And that's my favorite TV program.
Surprisingly enough, when the WWE considered making original content, they decided that their mindset was, we're going to do something that is wrestling related, but completely different than what we normally do. Where it didn't end up on the WWE network, but the first thing that they wanted to have as original content exclusive to the WWE network was the reality TV show Total Divas.
That turned out right, didn't it?
Yeah. Eventually, they ended up selling the TV show to E!, where it is surprisingly popular. It is the second most popular television program on E!, only second to Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
What? My mum watches that show. Like, Jesus Christ. I didn't realize it was that popular. Maybe my mum watching a bunch of pro wrestlers basically live their normal lives as normal as they can be is actually more popular than I thought.
Yeah.
But I still follow a lot of wrestling fans on Twitter, and that does get talked and brought up a lot, so I guess that makes a lot of sense now I think about it.
Dre, it's like, is your mom a wrestling fan?
No, she's not.
So, literally, she, like, there could have been a world where your mom was enticed enough to sign up for the WWE Network without being a wrestling fan. Could F1 do that with F1 TV?
If they produce the right original content.
Yeah.
Are they going to put Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, Kimi Raikkonen, and Valtteri Bottas in a giant house for 10 weeks a year and just see what happens? the real world Finland edition?
Oh, God. I'm telling you, that Daniel Ricciardo, Felipe Massa sitcom... gonna be fantastic.
And two then, and a half Felipe's.
And then there's the other direction where you could take it. I don't believe that it's currently on Fight Pass, but actually, it is on Fight Pass, the Ultimate Fighter for the UFC, which is it's another direction to take original content, where if you haven't heard of The Ultimate Fighter, it's basically, ooh, how do I describe The Ultimate Fighter to someone who knows nothing about the UFC?
It's a reality contest show. Yes, you have an amount of aspiring MMA fighters fighting for a UFC contract. At the end of each season, the winner gets a guaranteed six-figure deal. It basically saved the company.
Yes,
it did. The very first series when Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin had their legendary fight. And it got famous when somebody once jizzed in somebody's sushi. It's a great show. I highly recommend it. Oh, some of the older series, I've still got some of them on DVD. It was a fun time. So even I watched was guilty of the reality TV bug at some point.
Okay, so here's the current status of The Ultimate Fighter is that, yeah, originally ran on Spike TV. That's probably when the show was most popular. Now, after being on Fox Sports 1 for a couple of years, it is exclusively available on UFC Fight Pass.
Yikes.
So, I mean, I think the Ultimate Fighter format would work well for Formula One, especially considering what we talked about earlier with the feeder series being on there, where you could have, you know, a reality TV show with what next year is going to be Formula 3 and the Formula 2 drivers.
That could work. That could definitely work.
And though we could also, you know, make a little nod at Amazon's original series, The Grand Prix Driver, where they followed McLaren during their testing last year.
Ooh. I've heard it's great drama.
So, guys, I'm guessing you guys are both getting this at launch, right?
Yes. Yes, I'm getting this at launch.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I don't care how buggy it is. I'm getting it at launch.
Oh, yeah, I still hate WWE Network's video player. But, yeah, F1 TV, definitely getting it at launch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, jeez. I can't stand you people.
Hey, Dre, you can always get F1 TV, but you'll have to sell your soul to Sky.
That might be a fate worse than death, quite frankly. Jeez. Oh man. Luckily, I've got Sky Sports for the rest of the year anyway, because I was able to get it half price on a deal. Because, you know, once you threaten to quit half a dozen times, they actually come up with a decent deal to keep you on board.
Cable and satellite television has a very healthy and sustainable business model, folks.
And I can't believe we haven't mentioned this yet, but providing the English language commentary on F1 TV will be Sky TV's Sky Sports duo of David Croft and Martin Brundle.
It's the darts guy and the father of the LMP2 driver.
Yes. It is. I mean, for to start out, it's not that bad. Like, please don't make this a permanent thing. Like, 5 years down the road, I don't want Sky Sports commentary team to also be F1 TV's commentary team.
Oh, geez.
Which may be why they're grooming one William Buxton for the role, because it's 99.999999% confirmed he's going to be involved with F1 TV in some capacity.
Yeah. Like,
he's basically teasing his own Facebook appearances, so, you know.
Yeah, besides his most recent stint as, you know, NBC's pit reporter for, like, longest time, for a decade, he was GP2's commentator. From their inaugural season, for 10 years, he was their commentator. So he's familiar with FOM. They know him. I'm pretty sure they would like his commentary services sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm. Still, could be worse. It could be the season finale of The Bachelor.
Though, there's, like, one weird side story that people just can't, like, let go, where, FOM announced that they're gonna get, who are they gonna get to compose the theme music for FOM TV?
Oh my god, I don't know, but he did the work on the Fast and the Furious soundtrack, and they're gonna compose an original theme song for Formula One.
I think he's done work with Marvel before as well.
Yes, he's a Walt Disney Company employee. Let's just...
Oh, well, you know, the apple never falls far from the tree.
Yes. It's Brian Tyler, an Emmy-nominated American who's made music for Avengers Age of Ultron, Iron Man 3, Thor the Dark World, as well as the Fast and Furious franchise, and also wrote theme music for ESPN's NFL shows.
So he's familiar with, you know, sports music. I'd say I really enjoy the music that the NFL uses in-house and that ESPN uses for their programming. Not a big fan of NBC's opening theme. The interlude music that they use for, like, Sunday Night Football is fantastic.
Yes, it is. Definitely. Oh, jeez. Yeah, that could be fun, even though it just got a bunch of old heads going. The chain's the real theme, you know that? Like, guys, it's publicly available on the internet. Like, you don't have to worry here. We all know what the real theme is. It's okay.
I mean,
it's not going anywhere.
they're not gonna use the chain. It kind of, like, it wouldn't seem like a Liberty thing to do.
Yeah, like, that just seems very old to me, to be honest. But I'm okay with that. Like, fine. Like, new ownership syndrome. You want your own stamp on the place? Yeah. Don't have your own theme. Makes sense.
Well, again, it's a very specific reference to the British fan base, who, for the most part, won't have access to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for reminding us, King. That's really nice of you.
Because growing up. The chain was not my theme song. Hashtag not my theme song.
Not your
James
theme
Allen,
song.
James Allen was not my my lap announcer.
Yes.
he was for me, unfortunately. oh God. Anything else you guys want to get off your chest before we get out of the Dodge?
Quick sweep. Oh, one story which we'll probably have some people saying that the FIA stands for Ferrari International Assistance again. Former F1, Ferrari F1, you know, design chief. Oh my God, Nicholas Zambesis is going to be, he's taking up a role at the FIA where he will basically be the head of long-term technical strategy for all FIA single-seater series from Formula 1 to Formula 3, where he'll determine how the FIA as a whole will take the future of technical and sporting regulations for single-seater racing.
As I've mentioned before, Ferrari can have the FIA literally reg the races in their favor for all 20 rounds, and they could still maybe only win 2 out of 20.
Indeed.
Though it should be also be noted that his last role in F1 was being chief aerodynamicist at Manor. He also spent time at McLaren, so he's worked pretty much for everyone.
He's moving up in the world.
Yes. He knows what it's like to work for struggling British backmarkers and for Manor as well.
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez. So I guys want to go for chest?
Nah, yeah, I think that's everything.
That's a wrap, folks.
That is a wrap. Let's get out of here. We've done, God, like nearly 4 hours worth of audio in the last 2 days. Cheers, Lewis. in advance, I owe you another non-alcoholic beverage.
Hey, he's got time to put this out.
He does, even though we're probably recording the Bike Live 2018 MotoGP season preview on Thursday. So that should be fun and stressful. Like, who the hell do we think is going to win the title there? I can't wait for that, by the way. I'm very excited to talk about MotoGP again. My God, it's back in 2 weeks' time. I need bikes again! anyway, that'll be that later this week as well. So keep your eyes peeled for that one. In the meantime, places you can find us real quick one more time. YouTube and Facebook.com/Motorsport101. At Twitter, @Motorsport_101. Our personal handles, @RyanEricKing, that's with 2 Ks. At RJ O'Connell, @Harrison101HD. And @HSouthwellFE for Hazel, who was on earlier. Massive thanks to her, as always. And of course, if you really like us, you can back us on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to both this show and the aforementioned Bike Live MotoGP season preview, which will be out probably before the weekend. So keep half an eye on that one as well. We'll be back next week with our Formula One season preview. That's right, no more fortnightly breaks. We're back into the thick of things now. Good Lord help us all. But until then, we will crown Lewis Hamilton's fifth title on episode 126. Until then, thank you very much for listening. I've been Andre Harrison. They've been Ryan King and RJ O'Connell. And we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Bye.
You are the world champion!
So, did anyone actually see the end of The Bachelor?
No.
Oh, God.
No. I did see the end of the Stadium Super Trucks race, though.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I think that's... I do think that is Ari Jr.'s best contribution to media this year.
Yeah, probably.